This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling war.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heat wave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tnwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at Green_Weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have our weekly intro, Weak Thoughts, in which we discuss the DNC lawsuit over the 2016 election and how POTUS continues to be racist, a discussion of political themes of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, another live investigation into who is running on the Republican side in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, and we finish up with the talk about Syria and troubles for Trump's new cabinet appointments. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now for some weak thoughts.
Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to fleas. So fucking just do whatever you please. For the night commuters in Uganda, to the poor crack babies in Atlanta, from a continent that's ravaged by AIDS and transient amnesia. Housemaids from those who are never on the airwaves, the countless faceless horde of white slaves, bloody wars, fire patrol of oil.
All right. Welcome to Weak Thoughts. Welcome to Tell Me What to Think podcast. I'm Peter. I have with me Charles. What was that? You want to say hi?
Hello.
Hi. make sure to share our podcast far and wide.
Subscribe, right?
Yeah, and it is free. I mean, come on, guys. You don't even have to listen to any, like, ads that you hear in, like, the same exact ads in every single fucking podcast that's made.
Yeah, so, right? We're not going to go on, like, a two-minute rant about why you should support our Patreon.
Yeah.
We are not asking you for any money.
We just want influence, not money. and you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts,
Stitcher,
Podcast Addict. Let us know if there's anywhere else you want to hear us.
Or directly at stoneduckmedia.com.
Yes, I don't think we've ever actually said that in here. Yeah, stoneduckmedia.com.
If you want to go back for, because I know for some odd reason the RSS feed only keeps the last 10 episodes in the everything. So if you want the past episodes, go to our website.
Awesome. All right, let's start first with let's do a little correction of last week's episode.
Yeah, I was completely wrong about Scooter Libby. He was actually already readmitted to the bar in DC, so this pardon is purely for political purposes and kind of selfish on President Trump's part.
Yeah, so you had said that he maybe they're doing it, you know, like he petitioned. So, I mean, I don't even think he petitioned the White House.
No, he didn't.
About that part. I could be getting more things.
Yeah, right. I guess we could be making.
The more I talk, the more things I say that are incorrect. But anyways, yeah. So he was pardoned. It wasn't to get him on the bar.
Readmitted to the bar.
Yeah, admitted. He obviously wasn't. Never served a punishment, anyways, in terms of jail time.
If anything, it was a net positive. I mean, I guess that's what you get for loyalty.
Yeah. And then speaking of pardons, we kind of wanted to segue that. Did we cover everything that was wrong about that, by the way? Did I miss something?
I think that was pretty much it.
And we're correcting this because our former legal podcast advisor. Guest and, yes, legal editor.
Our once and future podcast guest.
Dave, also on Twitter at Drunkalocetus, made sure to correct us within hours of it going up. Anyway, but
also bring up interesting pardon news. The first major pardon of the Trump administration was Joe Sheriff, former sheriff. Do you always get to keep the sheriff
Joe
term?
Ohio. I don't think so.
It's not like secretary or president.
Governor.
I'm sure he still puts it on
or colonel.
Cards, though.
Not necessarily general, but colonel seems to follow people.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think the other ranks don't, right?
Right? You don't refer to yourself as retired captain unless you're just trying to plug your military service.
Or Captain America, which we'll get to later.
Or I'll say former specialist, Minute. No.
So, Joe Arpaio was pardoned by the Trump administration. They did not go through the normal channels, which is doesn't make it illegal or anything, but it is unusual. And he had not been sentenced yet. And so in the pardon process, so he was convicted but not sentenced. The Trump administration then pardons him, which gets rid of, you know, he doesn't have to serve any jail time, obviously. Prison time. He doesn't have to go to one of his own camps and wear pink underwear.
No, that was a county facility. He'd be in a state pen.
Oh, okay. But
they treat people better there.
Yeah. But he so because he was pardoned, he doesn't have to serve jail time, but theoretically most people, it sounds like constitutional scholars have always looked at it this way, that if you accept the pardon, you accept, it's like an admission of guilt.
Yeah, that's historical. That's historical Supreme Court precedent.
And so he wants the conviction itself
expunged.
No. Our legal editor already, he wants it vacated, not expunged.
Oh, okay. Right, there's a difference.
The difference being expunged would be after the punishment has been completed. So normally, well, I shouldn't say normally, because that's not normal for presidential pardons, but normally if you're trying to get the conviction off the record and you had already served the punishment, it would be expunged. In this case, it's being vacated. Arpaio wants it vacated. The way I understand it is the government is not the Department of Justice does not want to fight him on that, and so the Ninth Circuit out west set up a special counsel, C-O-U-N-S-E-E-L, which we now have to make sure to correct. Thank you, Trump. Because he spells it
like interchangeably wrong.
It's just so, and he keeps, oh my God. Anyway, we'll complain about him later. And so they're setting up their own special counsel to argue that he should have the conviction stay, which is normal. And in an unrelated thing, there's someone suing to have the, saying the whole thing is unconstitutional, which I don't know. I don't see that getting very far.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly.
But I found that interesting as well.
I mean, I can understand why the judge is resistant. Telling a judge to change your position to it. No, vacate the entire judgment so that it doesn't matter. Jigga what? No.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good for that judge. You know, I mean, I feel like a lot of these judges would feel, like, intimidated when they have the federal government telling them to do other things. Or arguing that they should do other things than tell it, not ordering them. Hmm. But, and it was, Susan Bolton, U.S. District Judge Susan Bolton, convicted her. Yeah. All right, I think that covers every possible thing we got wrong last week, I'm sure.
I'm sure there's more. Tell us what we got wrong.
Tell us how we're wrong. Yeah, we should do a commentary podcast. Where tell us how we're wrong. All right. So we were hanging out this past weekend and argued a little bit about the DNC lawsuit. So the Democratic National Committee filed a suit against the Trump administration, a bunch of his cronies, his son, I don't know who all was involved. I think it might have even also charged the GRU, the intelligence service from Russia. Or not charged, filed suit against. Which it's like, yeah, that's never going to happen. But, you know, I guess throw them in on it. Why not? I mean, isn't that a thing? I don't know the... I mean, the legal editor will have to chime in on this after the fact, but isn't that part of, like, some sort of precedent set up by, like, suing Saudi Arabia for 9/11?
Like, well, it's been around, like... Yeah, this is a long part of American justice.
Suing foreign governments and entities? Okay.
Yeah, for... for damages.
Yeah.
That's not really new.
Okay. Excuse me. Anyway, so...
The one thing that I will say, I will probably get these people into trouble in that respect, is that the judiciary doesn't touch foreign policy at all. So, whatever, like, the problem with suing a foreign entity like that, especially one that probably doesn't have any assets in America, is that it would impel... They could... Seeking the damages could compel the executive to act in a certain way in regards to foreign policy. And as I said, there's no way that they would do that. They don't even want to get themselves put in that position.
I would probably push back a little bit that they don't have any assets in America, but I think your point still holds. Because, I mean, we know that they were setting up people here and paying them. Oh, that was the Internet Research Agency. I'm sorry. That wasn't GRU. Right. I still feel like, wouldn't their intelligence service have something here?
Well, the GRU is a their military intelligence, specifically.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And well, so while they might have operatives here in official and unofficial capacities, they probably do not have bank accounts and like pieces of property.
They just have like tin boxes buried beneath trees and shit that they can... You know.
Or you could just set up a Cayman's Front organization and just run it as a corporation in the United States, but that's what we get for having such transparent laws.
Okay, so...
And I guess to segue into the other problem with this suit, from a legal standpoint, is the RICO use. Shout out to @Popat from Twitter for this point, but apparently federal judges, like, detest RICO charges. Like, there's, like, a 20-page questionnaire that you have to... federal judges make you fill out for just putting the word RICO in your suit.
Really?
Because it's it's something that a lot of people, like, vexatious litigants try to add on, and other people add on, to just make the suit seem more important and worse than, you know, the already terrible stuff that they're alleging. So, it's kind of purposeless and just a PR stunt that nobody likes. It's a waste of the judge's time, and it. And a side note, it will almost certainly keep this lawsuit from being heard before the 2018 elections. It'll probably be 2019 or maybe even closer to 2020 when we find out what the results are.
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of took, not necessarily, like, disagreeing with the specifics you mentioned, but the same article... which I believe was actually by Ellie Mistal. No.
I think we read different articles.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, which was, bringing up the RICO thing nonetheless. And it would be super hard in a civil case, the way I understand it, to prove well, they're not using the term RICO, but it essentially is. To prove that, but if you were to get past the first steps, it's going to be a big headache for the defendants. And I also don't disagree with it getting very far before the midterm elections, but I mean, like, how many civil cases would be? Like, if I sued my neighbor over a tree or something, I mean, is that going to get...
That'd probably be small claims, but...
But is that going to get taken care of before... You know, October?
Yeah, almost certainly. Well, maybe, but...
I mean, being a little hyperbolic, but I'm just saying, like
90% of these cases are settled, as probably that tree case would also be settled, and... Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but I still think that we're so close to the midterm election that any hope of this affecting that directly, like an end to the case affecting it, is foolish to think. I mean, I agree with you that it's foolish, but I also don't know that that's necessarily the goal, is to directly resolve the case before then. I think it's one hand to resolve the case before 2020, maybe, and on the other is probably to just throw out a threat. Be like, hey, if you try this again in November, we'll, you know, look at what we're doing now. We'll come after you again with lawyers. You know, I think it's not so much, it's just to let kind of the, you know, the people that they're suing, to let them know, like, hey, we're on to you.
Yeah, but to do it in some, I don't know. To my mind, like, there's a couple of good reasons for, or at least one good reason for the DNC to do this, and, like, several bad ones. Like, it is known the Democratic National Committee is, like, barely making payroll, so for them to do something like this, which is an insanely expensive and litigious affair, is dangerous, if not desperate. On the other hand, the one positive political point to come out of all of this is that, as, you know, the suit progresses, there will be a continuing string of headlines about all of the revelations or machinations in the case.
Depositions and files. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, all this shit, yeah.
I mean, that's, I guess, a positive, but I don't know if it's worth, like, the institutional damage that this could cause, just in terms of money.
To the party.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and politically,
when I think of the Democratic Party, I'm not thinking of a party that, you know, like, I think they are desperate. Like, like, you're saying it's a sign of them being desperate, and I'm like, yeah, they are desperate. They got fucking their ass handed to them in more elections than not the past 20 years or so? 20
well,
years?
Well, yeah, but this, and on a, 18. But this isn't the fight to rectify that, you know? Like, this isn't, like, a door-to-door effort to, like, get more people to vote. This is just something that, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of money to put lawyers in a courtroom for something like this, and the same amount of money could put a vastly larger number of people onto streets to canvass and go door-to-door to get people registered to vote.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm skeptical of that claim until I see how much money is being spent on this lawsuit and how that could be dispersed to candidates. And, you know, I mean, in terms of the midterms coming up, I don't think lack of money is the problem for Democrats.
It is. As I said, they're barely making payroll. Like, the Republicans last quarter had, like, $46 million cash on hand, and the Democrats barely had one.
Yeah, but that's the party. I mean, I think candidates as a whole are independently raising a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Individually. And
which,
through super PACs.
In the end, that is, you know, that's how, I mean, look at it another way, too. It's like, it's, I think the left is decentralizing because of poor leadership by the DNC. Mm. And I just don't know that, like, maybe this is what they have to offer. This is something they, I don't know, maybe not. And by the way, if they don't have enough money to do all these other things, they might not have enough money to continue this case. So,
yeah,
I mean,
as I said, a danger to the institution.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anyway, I think it is, I mean, I'm by no means, like, saying there's no problems with it, just, there, I mean, I didn't even bring up, I don't think, how it could potentially conflict with the Mueller investigation. You know, I'm sure Mueller didn't see this and be like, oh, yeah, good for them. You know?
Yeah, it's got to be annoying, because he knows his he's going to be having 1,001 people trying to get into his case files to get evidence for the suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it might almost rush him a bit.
Hmm.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
So I've found this tweet by the president about breeding, people breeding in sanctuary cities.
Oh my God, that's, the coded racism is just disgusting. Like, animals breed, people are born. You ingrate. Coded racist.
Yeah, so first of all, that... Okay, there's an argument to be made, although it... There's an argument to be made that the president meant to say breeding contempt. Although if you look at the tweet and you put in breeding contempt instead of breeding concepts, it still doesn't really make sense.
Makes less sense.
But at least, I think I saw someone on Twitter like, why didn't Sarah Sanders just say that? You know, end of discussion. It might be a lie, but she lies all the time. At least that would be a lie that would pretty much just put to rest in some ways, you know, be like, oh, you know, the people who think he's a racist think he's a racist. People who don't think he don't. And just let me read the tweet here just to be, there is a revolution going on in California. So many sanctuary areas want out of this ridiculous crime infested and breeding concept. I don't still don't really know what this means.
That's still unclear.
So, he probably did mean breeding contempt, but...
I think the breeding concept he's referring to is the demographic changes happening in California.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, what I was going to say
it
is that...
more racist.
It, so, talking about them breeding and being like animals, that is coded racism that is used by these people like who's that congressman who's super racist? Stephen King? Steve King?
Yeah, from Iowa?
Yeah. Like, he talks about shit like this. That's something that these neo-Nazi white supremacists just... alt-right, whatever the fuck they are. These people actually talk like that and about that. And so, I don't even know that this was Trump, by the way. It's almost too sloppy. I think this might have been, you know, Stephen Miller or one of those types.
I think somebody younger would have been more adept at using their phone. Maybe not.
Well, it's not necessarily misspellings. It's just like it to me. It has these young, like, so, and then I don't know. It's capitalized in certain weird ways. I don't know. Who knows who did it? But it was our monthly. I think it's about monthly example of how we have a racist president.
Huh? Yeah, it's, you know, a daily. A daily reminder.
Yeah, I don't know if he's daily says something racist. It seems like, or at least once a month, there's like a big one that gets a lot of attention.
Hmm. Well, we don't see him every day.
Yeah.
We just get his tweets.
Thank God. I can go a couple days sometimes without seeing tweets from him. If I just don't go too deep into Twitter and he doesn't do anything that totally freaks out people.
And don't read the news. So that's what they cover a lot of the times. So I try to stick to international news.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't read those, like, you don't click on the story that is about what Trump said today.
I don't care. Is it policy? It has nothing to do with policy. It's just him being a donkey.
To defend that reporting a little bit, though, that's as close as we get about in terms of what the president is saying about policy. I mean, like, obviously, he actually signs things, which are binding, or, you know, they're actual documents that actually affect policy. But in terms of, like, trying to get into his head about policy, it is the closest thing you get.
Right, because they only let him speak when he has, like, a plane noise or a helicopter behind him.
Yes, he's always in front of a helicopter being honest.
That's the only time the press is able to get that close to him. It's, like, even Bush, like, say what you will about W, the war criminal that he is, but he gave press conferences. I mean, he would sweat and bumble through them, but at least he would talk to the press.
Yeah.
Consent to be in the same room with them.
Yeah. They're redefining the unwritten parts of the presidency from top to bottom. I mean, it's all aspects. It's not just the, like, governing norms. It's publicity norms as well.
Mm-hmm.
Campaigning norms, obviously.
Communication norms.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. I think that was all I had for weak thoughts. Did you have anything? Oh, wait, I hear a truck. I hear one of those.
Yeah,
semis.
Sorry for that.
No, that's okay. I think I had a plane before.
That's the sound of commerce.
That's the sound of a rebirth in Beloit.
Yeah. It's just. But anyways, there is one good bit of good news I just saw. They just revoked the bail bond for that guy who shot up Waffle House.
So there was a. Am I being fair calling him a white supremacist? Have we determined that yet?
All these radical. For some odd reason the mainstream media is or like I've read newspaper articles about we don't know why he did it. It's like, huh? A white guy who's apparently insane went into a Waffle House and shot dead four black people. He has known ties with white supremacists and law enforcement, but we don't know why he did this. Huh. I don't believe you.
He has ties to law enforcement? What does that mean?
I think he knew cops. That's about... I mean, almost everybody knows cops, right?
Yeah. I have family members, yeah.
I have... Yes. Well, my neighbor's son is a cop, so that counts.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Everyone knows some cops. I hope those weren't... too overlapping of social circles, but probably was, unfortunately.
I mean, we've seen evidence that, like, white supremacists were infiltrating the military after 2001, and so now they're trickling into the civilian life and law enforcement.
Yeah.
Like, the response to the counter-protests in Noonan this weekend were disgusting.
Well, how do you mean there was... Oh, like the police response?
Yeah, those sheriffs tricked out, like, special forces operatives in a town of 30,000 people.
And so that was, like, so give me, like, a short background.
So this past weekend, some white supremacists, basically a handful of Nazis and their sympathizers, held a rally in a small town called Noonan, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta. The counter-protests, which dwarfed the protest by, like, orders of magnitude, were controlled, I'll say it diplomatically, by the local sheriff's department, who brought their up-armored... vehicles and, as I said, all of their equipment so that they could look like special forces guys and feel like they're in the military, I imagine. But yeah, they were pointing their weapons without using good trigger discipline at counter-protesters and pulling people out of the crowd who were wearing masks and forcibly arresting them. I don't understand, man. They weren't in the street. I assume Georgia probably has a law about having your face covered in a protest. Anyway, but it was still disgusting. There was very little reason for that.
Okay.
But yeah, apparently that guy who shot up the Waffle House, though, had gotten caught by the Secret Service with his weapons in the vicinity of the White House, gave the weapons to his father, and then the father gave the weapons back to the kid, who then proceeded to go shoot up the Waffle House.
Oh.
Yeah. So the story is complicated.
I'm sorry, wait, why did he give them to his father?
Huh? No, the Secret Service confiscated the guy's guns when he was discovered with weapons near the White House, and so instead of arresting him or, like,
yeah,
keeping the weapons, they gave him back to his father. Probably, maybe he's a law enforcement officer? I'm not sure. This whole story is murky.
What the fuck?
But yeah, earlier, what was it, yesterday, they gave him a $2 million bail bond.
Yeah.
But that was just revoked because of, shall we say, popular pushback.
Good.
Like, Reality Winner has been in jail for almost an entire year eating stale potato chips and canned vegetables, but that guy gets out and gets to breathe fresh air.
Well, an opportunity to get out.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily... Like, he wouldn't necessarily have been able to afford it.
No, I think he did get out.
Are you kidding me?
Of course not. Well, you only have to put up, like, 10% to get a bond, so...
Oh.
So that guy, like any large piece of real estate, would almost certainly be worth $200,000, even in Tennessee.
What the what is the judge thinking?
Yeah, I don't know. It's Tennessee. He's a nice white boy. But how could they even get a supremely dangerous, like, shooter when people like... there's so many contradictions in American society. It just makes me sick to my stomach to think about for any measure of time.
Yeah. All right, we should move on, but I do just want to say, just so it saves me any editing later, we did read different articles.
Okay.
You sent out an article that I just assumed by the title was the one that I read, but it wasn't. And so, yeah, we read two articles by two lawyer bloggers about the RICO element of the DNC case that I'm pretty sure, though I haven't read yours yet here that you sent out, but pretty sure have
to
different...
to the same point.
Well, maybe. I'll have to read this.
Similar one. Points, but yeah. Similar
Yeah. So I'm sure our legal editor would tell us something about
why we're both wrong.
Sounds like there's trouble down there. Infinity War is coming out, and as someone who's raised reading comics, although I never fucking bought an Avengers comic, which I kind of want to get into, like how the why I like the MCU is that it made me like, eventually, it took years actually, watching Iron Man, Captain America, Avengers. I never was into that. But anyways, Avengers comes out. There have been something like 18 movies or something, kind of building on this world. Yeah. And I think, well, I'll just say no. I think part of the reason I've got into it, I mean, first of all, they're fun movies, they're funny, but is that, you know, and they build this big story world, which is just fun to immerse yourself in, but I feel like these movies are saying something, both individually and as a whole. I don't exactly know what. I'm still trying to figure it out. Maybe part of that'll be in, if not this one, then the one after it.
Wait, was Age of Ultron aimed at Zuckerberg then?
Age of Ultron definitely had like a, you know,
tech gone awry.
Yeah, kind of dangers thing. Of AI. I mean, in the end, Stark caused that.
Yeah, right.
People are like, don't do it. And
that's why I love how, like, later in Civil War, it's like, we need to be take responsibility for our actions. We need oversight. And, like, I feel like the rest of the team should have been like, we?
Yeah.
We, Tony?
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, he was...
Like, Banner's now an intergalactic fugitive, and you're the only one here left who built Ultron.
Yeah, and even Banner didn't really want to do it. But he did do it. I mean, he did help. Yeah. But it's like... Tony Stark, Iron Man, in Age of Ultron, it's not just that he, like, was trying to do this thing that has these clear dangers, you know, like a Big Brother type, you know, safety net for the world, but he was trying to do it with something he didn't understand, which was, we find out, to be the Mind Stone. And, yeah, I mean, is that kind of like a Pandora's box metaphor, I think?
At the very least, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, what do you think are, like, some of, like, the other
theme, political themes of the MCU?
Yeah.
Well, there's a misogyny one that Black Widow didn't get a movie in phases 2 or 3.
Yeah, like, well, she's been a main character in.
Sure, since Iron Man 2, which, you know, the second movie notionally in the...
Yeah.
But never had her own movie, but...
Yeah, sure.
For narrative purposes, it would have filled that hole between Age of Ultron and... What, Iron... Or the other... The
Civil
Avengers
War?
Movie? Yeah. Or no, before Age of Ultron. Like, because you don't really see why her and Banner so close. Like, they never really develop that. They just kind of show up at in that first battlefield in Age of Ultron, and she can already, like, tell him the sun's going down and revert him back into Banner.
Oh,
I feel like there was, like, some character development missing there.
Yeah. Almost as if, like they did with other characters, there should have been... I mean, I see what you're saying for the misogyny aspect, but in terms of just what they... It's almost as if they had a Hulk movie where she was going to be the second character, like they did with Iron Man and Captain America with her, but they just never did it.
They should have just made it a Black Widow movie, because it would have been so much more engaging than... Yeah, anyway. We could talk about freedom and surveillance.
I think that's a big one.
The 1940s American who looks at the terrorist surveillance program PRISM and all of the constellation of NSA programs that we're living under now would, to say the least, balk.
Well, and he has, I mean, he has issues. I mean, Civil War isn't necessarily about his reaction to that, but...
True.
Well, actually, let's even move back with Captain America to Winter Soldier. Because his first issue, I mean, obviously, as the movie progresses, it turns out, hey, there are these murderous, evil cult that's taken over everything.
Holy cow, Hydra's back.
Yeah. Yeah, which he obviously has a history with. But in the beginning of the movie, Nick Fury's like, yeah, we're building these things that can just, like, kill everyone that we want to kill, like, just like that. And Captain America's skeptical of that.
Yeah.
He's like, whoa, hey, like, these are way too powerful.
Right? Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Because it's interesting with Captain America. Go ahead.
Sorry. That's probably why they had to write that Captain America went under the ice after fighting Hitler, because if he had been alive, he would have gone into Japan personally to end the war and not have let the bombs be dropped.
That's what I was going to say, is that he wasn't the way it's written, and then they continue to do for the MCU, is that he doesn't see the end of World War II, meaning he doesn't see the nuclear. He's completely gone for the Cold War. In the MCU, he's completely gone for the entire Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like, he's definitely skeptical of too much power.
Right, because even during the war, Roosevelt made a point of, like, planning for the Army's eventual return, well, basically for all those guys to come home after the war was over.
Yeah.
Because they fought that war knowing that once Hitler was done, the vast majority of them were going to go back to their farms and factories.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, that Captain America is skeptical of super weapons, but you can argue he kind of is a super weapon. But he is just one person. Like, he was supposed to be one of many, but that didn't happen.
Thankfully.
Yeah. And so, like, it's, I don't know, it's an interesting thing. Like, is Captain America, is one super soldier a super weapon? I don't know. He's definitely effective.
Yeah, you can't argue with his effectiveness. We can talk about Thor's transition from a... Maga Asgardian to progressive ruler.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
If you recall, the beginning of Thor's basic opinion was make Asgard great again.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Through war and, you know, like, we can just fight all of our problems.
Right? Might makes right.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, gets beaten down and loses everything, and eventually is almost a communist by the end of it, right? Well, isn't that what Asgard is?
He's definitely more about the people than the wealth and even institutions. He's willing to let it all... I mean, he doesn't, in a way, have much of a choice, but he's willing to let it all be destroyed to save the people. It's really, like, down-to-the-ground-level politics, so to speak.
Yeah, but strangely abstract. Like, do you destroy the state to save the society?
Yeah.
His answer, yes. Well, I mean, not really the state, but because he's still king.
Correct.
But I argued it would probably come down to if it came down to a popular vote, he would probably be elected.
Him or Heimdall.
Well, you were out gallivanting and Heimdall was here trying to save people. What do you got to say for that?
Heimdall's a totally community organizer.
The world's best, right? He can see everything at all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, he's exactly what Trump fears. Heimdall is spying on me. Okay, so one thing I've been thinking about with the themes of the MCU is, and this is kind of going into Infinity War, which obviously I don't know what happens, but I think the setup for Infinity War is mostly Civil War, Captain America Civil War, which sees the... I mean, in the end, yeah, Captain America writes a little love letter to Iron Man, but it's pretty bitter. Definitely splits them apart. The Avengers as a functioning, super powerful organization was at least temporarily over.
Right, and that was totally narcissistic on Tony's part. I mean, yeah, I mean, I imagine his feelings would be hurt, but the fact that he continued that fight is really what broke up the Avengers.
Oh, you mean at the very end, because it got personal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't...
Tony made it personal.
You know, he didn't... Like, Captain was right, too, though. Like, he didn't know it was Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier,
right,
that did it. I mean, Tony Stark's not a stupid person. He knows what mind control is, right? I mean...
He's seen mind control, right? Like, certainly by now.
And so... Yeah, he just... Yeah, I think you're right. It's, like, ego, it's pride, it's vanity, it's... It's honestly just a little bit like the little boy in him. I think that's why they first show him in the movie being, like, a young man whose parents are leaving, and he has daddy issues, he has mommy issues because he has daddy issues. And, yeah. So, anyway, Civil War sets the stage, I think, for... So it reminds me of what I think Game of Thrones is about, or rather, I should say, A Song of Ice and Fire, which is humanity fighting amongst itself with petty political battles as there are bigger things to worry about. Like, in our real world, say, climate change or something like that.
Right, like liberals and conservatives strangling each other to death while the waters rise up around their ankles.
Yes. And so I think that's what's kind of going on, and maybe that's been happening since probably Hydra was introduced to the plot of the MCU.
What, back in the original Captain America?
Okay, maybe not that one, but at least Winter Soldier. Like, when Hydra started being part of the modern world, like, when they revealed that they're still around. And so since at least... Which, by the way, the first MCU movie directed by the guys who did Infinity War, their first MCU movie was Winter Soldier. So I think this is... I think... And then they did Captain America Civil War, and now they're doing these two Avengers. And I think the idea here is the humans fight amongst each other, or the heroes, like, you know, on Earth, leaving them vulnerable to this greater threat. And that was somewhat done in the Marvel comics, I believe, with, well, sort of, when they had the Civil War in the comics, which was pretty much between Iron Man and Captain America as the two sides, that was all happening on Earth, keeping all those people busy, while there was another big crossover event in Marvel Comics going on in the universe called the Annihilation Wave, where, like, there's this giant force led by, what's his name, Annihilus, from the Negative Zone invading reality.
Holy cow.
And, like, all of the Guardians of the Galaxy, the Nova Corps, Warlock, and, you know, all those people were involved.
Infinity Watch.
I have a feeling even Thanos was like, what the fuck? And was helping
okay,
them.
Okay, we have to have something to rule, so I'm going to have to put a kibosh to this.
Yeah, and so it kind of reminds me of, yeah, the petty Game of Thrones, leaving them vulnerable. And yeah, I mean, whether or not that's a metaphor for, to me, the most obvious is climate change, but it can be any sort of bigger social issue.
Fascism.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanos seems a little fascist, for sure.
Yeah. Well, actually, we could talk about the real fascist, Hydra. How, at different points in this MCU, they have at least two Infinity Stones, like, with, like, you know, in their possession.
Yeah, so they had the Red Skull obtained the Tesseract, which, I don't know, is that the
space stone?
Space Stone,
yeah.
And then later on in Age of Ultron, they had the Mind Stone.
Mm-hmm. And they got Loki's Scepter, purloined it when S.H.I.E.L.D. Fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad they don't get any of the other ones. They don't, I guess they don't leave Earth, but...
Yeah.
And certainly the Collector wouldn't give up the stone that he has, right?
Yeah. This, I mean, the big mystery going into this movie is where the Soul Stone is, but yeah, I'm assuming Hydra has nothing to do with that. I think Hydra's pretty much written out at this point. I think they're taken care of.
Yeah, they're going to pop up in the next whatever Captain America movie comes out.
And I don't know if they're going to do another one beyond these Avengers movies, which is another reason why they might just kill him off. Or...
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be a Phase 5 for when they... like when Steve Rogers is no longer Captain America, but there is a Captain America.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, yeah, which was really common in the comic books. There have been multiple people who were Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anything else? Oh, okay, so we did a whole episode about Black Panther politics. I don't know. I can't really think of any. I don't know if there's Guardians of the Galaxy politics. Those seem like more personal human stories than bigger, broader issues.
Yeah, kind of, not necessarily petty, but, you know, smaller scale? In a bigger scale somehow? I don't know. It's the lines blur.
Yeah, well, they're really about, like, individual relationships kind of trumping... Like, that's the end of the first Guardians. It's like the newfound friends hold hands and fight off,
Arbiter. Yeah. The Kree lawyer.
Ronan the Accuser.
Right.
He's like a religious judge. Guy's fucked up. They did a good job.
More of a prosecutor.
Yeah, but he's super, he's cultish or religious in some way. He has these, like...
Talk to some lawyers, man. They're kind of cultish about the law, right?
He kind of has, like, these, for our world, we'd call, like, white supremacist views, sort of. He's, like, he's big on, like, purity of his race. Maybe there is a political aspect to that, you know, because then he faces off against, like, this ragtag group that are all different...
species?
I mean, you find out Peter Quill is, I guess, biracial. In that he's half celestial, half human.
Sure. Groot's not even mammalian.
He's from a different kingdom. I don't know what... Gamora and Drax look the same, but I don't think they are.
Well, they're humanoid.
Yeah, but they're aliens from different places, I believe. And then
you get...
Raccoon, who's like creation. He's not even really a raccoon. He doesn't even know what a raccoon is.
And there's some, like, the scientific ethical debates there. Like, does somebody who's been given, like, an AI, does it have voting power because it exists?
Yeah.
Raccoon is arguably just a raccoon who now learned has the ability to talk. I guess the fact that he can point and aim guns so well gives him the right to vote.
I mean, he's super smart, too. He's actually one of the smarter characters.
Yeah, in the whole MCU.
Yeah. This was from the comics, but there was a storyline where, like, Iron Man meets Rocket Raccoon, and Rocket Raccoon has, like, these gadgets, and, like, even Tony Stark is, like, super impressed by them, and, like, Rocket is like, how do you even live without this stuff? like, how do you go about your day without this? He's super smart. He always, you know, he has those elaborate plans and shit. Which I'm sure will be his role in Infinity War.
Yeah, he seems to be the planner.
Yeah, he's going to have some sort of thing, and then he's going to make, like, Thor, like, you know, like in the first Guardians, like, get some guy's prosthetic leg or some shit like that. And, anyway, alright, that was fun to talk. I'm super excited. My prediction is everyone dies. We'll see.
Yeah, that seems to track. I mean, we had the, was it Tony had that vision? Or was it Steve Rogers?
No, it was Tony, and that in the vision, all the Avengers are dead, which granted, there were way fewer Avengers in that vision than... and then
that vision is going to come true.
All right, so in last week's episode, we talked about some guy who I already forgot the name of who's running for Congress in the 1st District to replace Paul Ryan on the Republican
Ryan
side.
Ryan style.
No, the last week guy.
Nick Pulce.
Oh, yeah, Nick Pulce. Well, turns out we didn't need to really look into him because someone that is more closely associated with Paul Ryan is now running, and his name is Brian Stile.
Man, look at all the press coverage he's getting.
So I guess he's a former Ryan staffer, driver I saw reported.
Corporate, now a lawyer in Chainsville.
Corporate attorney. So much like last week when we stumbled onto that guy, we're going to... we don't know anything. I don't really know anything about him.
I just typed his name into Google.
We're going to find out about him live for you, audience.
But yeah, within like 2 days of him announcing, he's already got ads on Google for donations.
Yep, yeah. You look him up on Google, and the top thing is, yeah.
And how are you a manufacturer if you help reorganize manufacturing companies into... But never mind. No.
Oh, he's a UW Regent, according to
the
Badger
Board of Regents.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, he's a fucktard then.
Yeah, he's one of the people that Paul or Governor Walker thought should be in charge of our education, which means he's probably not good at education.
He's... So this former Ryan staffer is, quote, going to take on the, quote, political establishment.
Fight from the inside.
Yes. He has problem-solving skills. This sounds like a bullshit resume to me. There's... In two sentences here on the Badger Herald, which I'm not even blaming them. They're quoting him and talking about things that he said. Quote, problem solver, said he wants to take his problem-solving skills to Congress and said the country is in need of problem solvers. Wow.
And just keep chanting problem solver, because that's what the ad is, Brian Stile for Congress, problem solver, manufacturer.
Wow, yeah, they researched that term. And all right.
Well, because people are seeing problems now, and it's going to be a big catch, or... attention catcher in 2018 and 2020 about fixing problems and problem solvers.
Yes, because his predecessor created so many.
So many problems, like trillions of dollars of problems.
So, I'm looking here, according to the Badger Herald, we didn't even know about this, maybe this will be next week's episode. There's also a guy named Jeff Wombolt.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Jeff Wombolt running for... but let's not get distracted. Only one white guy running for the Wisconsin 1st District congressional seat.
You should try to get Kathy Meyer on.
Yes, we should. But, oh, God damn it. Pen's not working. Anyway. Alright, anything else about this guy? He likes Wisconsin values.
What does that mean?
Are
those the same, like, hard-working values that are kicking people off of welfare?
Midwestern work ethic.
There it is. There's the phrase. Midwestern work ethic. Yeah. That's such a loaded phrase.
Oh, yeah. You know, he kind of looks like a less out of shape, or less in shape, Paul Ryan.
Yeah, it is.
It's like the same exact haircut.
Probably goes to the same barber.
Yeah.
When did he get on the Board of Regents? And I love how just because he announced he's already the front runner of apparently three. How many people have we covered? Three now? Or with the Jeff next Jeff guy next week.
Well, he'll be that, and then there's Paul Nalin, the racist. Like, the outwardly racist.
Yeah, the guy who is so racist he got banned from the platform of racists, that is Twitter. Sorry, Jack.
But he worked as Ryan's personal driver from 2003 to 2004. He is the first vice chairman on the Rock County Republican Board and is well known to GOP... Here's why he's a front runner. Well known to GOP activists in Ryan's southeastern Wisconsin congressional district, although it says here, but lacks a high public profile. I mean, does anyone have a high public profile?
Randy Bryce.
Yeah, but that's after campaigning for months.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, I can't really picture anyone who would get into the race, except for maybe, like, Reince Priebus or some, you know.
Reince, he already said he wouldn't.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everybody closer to the establishment is, like, running from this race. Except this guy, apparently. Yeah, and the other thing we should cover is that the AP had to make a correction on their article to highlight the strange politics of Rock County. How Beloit and Janesville, even though they're like maybe a dozen miles apart, are in two completely different congressional districts. Janesville is in the first congressional district, and even though Pete and I are physically like 60 miles away from each other right now, we're both in the third congressional district.
Yeah, if you look at the map, it sort of, like, does a weird little...
boop in the bottom of Rock County.
So Beloit didn't used to be,
No, we were once in the first congressional district.
Yeah.
But they gave that to Mark Pocan and gave part of Southern Waukesha to Paul Ryan.
Yes, that would have been, while maintaining Janesville as part of the first, because Paul Ryan lived there and is at least a little more conservative.
Than Janesville? Yeah, I would say so.
No, I'm saying Janesville is more conservative than Beloit, I would guess.
Yeah, probably. Especially now that all the union workers have moved away.
Yeah. I I got into an exchange on, it was like Twitter or something like that, a few weeks ago, and I was wrong, but the person made some comment about how Ryan has a fair number of wealthy conservative voters in Southern Waukesha, and I was like, that's not part of the first district. And it took me some research to figure out, I mean, it didn't take me a lot of research to figure out he was right, but to figure out that I was right in that growing up, that was not, for me, in the 90s, that was not a part of the district.
Mm-mm.
That got changed, I think, in 2001. He was only in office for a few years.
We can talk about the demographic shift there, too, because Beloit is one of the other few cities in Wisconsin that's minority-majority. And Southern Waukesha, I'm going to bet, has very few minorities living there.
Oh, God. The only thing I wasn't sure of, if that guy was really right, whoever said that online, was that I don't know how many people live in Southern Waukesha. Like, is it even that many? I don't know.
It's pretty densely populated.
Southern? Is it? Okay.
I mean, it's part of the whole Milwaukee area, greater Milwaukee area, so it's... Is that Oconomowoc that's in Southern Waukesha?
No, I don't think Oconomowoc's there.
No, it's not Oconomowoc. That's East Troy.
I have no idea. I don't know much about
Waukesha. Oh, yeah, it's like Muskego, Muckwonago, Big Bend. Yeah. There's a lot of wealthy developments.
Muskego's pretty nice, yeah. Okay, I didn't... Yeah.
I bet that wasn't part of the first district before, if I had to bet.
Last time I ended up driving through Muskego, you go through that town and you're like, did I end up in some sort of elven kingdom? It's super nice here. even their school looks just, like, wonderful. So anyway, Brian Stile, let's get back to him. Kathy Ryan says he, as a UW regent, he was a, quote, rubber stamp.
That makes sense.
sorry, Myers, not Meyer. Kathy Myers. Mm-hmm. Bryce campaign spokeswoman Lauren Hitt called Style part of the institutional Republican swamp that believes we should give tax breaks to the wealthy and pay for it by attacking working people's retirements and health care.
Well, you know, go with what you know if you have to make a statement on somebody.
Now let's go to this guy's actual website. Does he have a website yet?
I couldn't find one. It's not the first page of
results. It's styleforwisconsin.com.
Okay. Huh, I'm not even on the first page of results.
About... I just think there's been so much recent media coverage that those are getting... Oh, Craig High School grad.
Of course. Just like Paul Ryan.
Member
they might have gone to school together.
Well, he's younger. He's like a decade younger.
Yeah. And from St. John. So yeah, this guy followed exactly in Paul Ryan's footsteps.
I think
that's where he went to school, too.
Interesting. Well, it says he's a member of St. John... Vianney Parish, so maybe...
Oh, right, not member. So he might not have gone to school there, but I would bet that he did.
But even so, he probably is part of the same congregation as Ryan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right?
Does Ryan go... He's Catholic, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he might go to St. Mary's, because that's closer to downtown.
Oh, okay. So this guy has a history of private sector experience, public service, sure,
and community involvement.
He spent the last 9 years working in manufacturing in southeastern Wisconsin.
Look at that shot of him in blue jeans that have never seen real work in the splash photo.
They're not even fake worn. They're just brand new.
Yeah, almost brand new, right? They had to, like, somehow get the creases out of them.
When you meet Brian, he will probably talk to you about Badger football.
Why can't we talk about taxes?
This is super not informative. This is all they have so far? Is this real?
They have an about page up here. Let's look at
that. That's what I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah, that is the about page. Holy cow, what?
What the fuck?
Man, even Nick Pulce had more of an opinion than this guy.
I'm definitely for rooting for Pulce over this guy. At least Pulce served. Not that, I mean, we went over that.
I mean,
it doesn't mean much, but
it's
whatever.
Yeah.
All else being equal, which it does seem to be the case, I don't know. This guy's he's on the Board of Regents. Board of Regents has been highly politicized in this state.
Highly politicized.
Ever since Walker took over.
For the worst education policies. Like, they're just starving our education system of resources and... Then telling them
not
to pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Not paying professors and... Well, shit. I mean, I'm a little disappointed. I thought this guy was going to have, like, cool thing. Not cool,
right?
But, you know, it's the opposite of cool. Lame things about himself.
Yeah, right? I mean, all we're seeing is, like, the same two articles about him over and over again, written by various people in this one splash page of a website.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to that advertisement and see if that's even more has anything more about him.
I mean, it seems
it just takes you to his webpage.
The contribute
is even less developed.
The contribute portion, yeah. It seems like he's.
Oh no, it doesn't exist. It's an ad for a page that doesn't exist.
Ooh.
This page is a mystery, and there's a picture of a brachiosaurus.
It seems like he might have, like, a little bit of a stranglehold on media coverage of him. And he's...
Well, I mean, if you know all the reporters and know who to talk to, you can get stories written. Apparently Nick Pulce does not have that kind of reach.
Well, and it seems like he's holding back. Like...
You think?
Well...
Like, don't give him anything to talk about and don't give him anything to attack? Interesting.
Give him things to talk about. Call in some favors so they talk about those things. And then that way they won't ask more questions, at least yet. I mean, as things move on, I'm sure. But,
How has he been in manufacturing, though? Does anybody report where he worked? Let me see what the Gazette says.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't even name the company.
Oh, he's a performance micro tool? Hang on. I'm reading the Gazette. This is from, Janesville's paper.
He looks like a performance micro tool.
Speaking to dozens of family, friends, and supporters at Performance Micro Tool on Janesville's north side, Style criticized the federal government's spending habits and what he said was its tendency to prevent economic growth. Style pushed for creating jobs and improving education. What? How do you criticize the spending habits and tell people... Okay, that's obviously he's a privatization guy, just from those statements.
Here, WPR is saying... Styles' campaign website, Styles' campaign website, launched just before his announcement, made no mention of those ties, instead highlighting his professional experience. The ties they're referring to are, he was a delegate at the RNC
yeah,
in 2016.
Okay. So he is the swamp.
Yeah. here we go. He was an attorney for Milton-based... Charter NEX Films and Regal Beloit Corp.
Oh, so he worked in Janesville. He lived in Janesville and worked in Beloit. That's great.
He has proven to be a consistent advocate for providing high quality and affordable education.
I don't believe that. I mean, I guess the tuition freeze kind of keeps education affordable, but at what cost?
So he's playing off his private sector work as seeing, quote, firsthand too often how our own federal government gets in the way and puts up unnecessary roadblocks.
All these environmental protections and laws that say you have to pay people for what they're worth...
So
I just want to move to Mexico and pay them a dollar an hour. Can we do that? Kevin Steen? Who is this guy? There's another one?
Oh, man, they're coming out of the woodwork.
We have Nick Polche, Kevin Steen, Jeff Wambolt, and Paul Nalen. Wow, this field's getting crowded. Kevin Steen. We'll have to maybe do a two for next week.
Oh wait, it's Kevin Steen.
Oh my god. And of course here's the first. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say something I saw talked about some sort of liberal Madison protester that's running on the Republican ticket in first district.
Interesting. Wisconsin UW political science professor Barry Burden says Stiles' announcement will make him, quote, the first serious Republican to enter, unquote, Burden said.
Hey, let's not forget about Nick Polche, even though I started this segment forgetting about him.
Yeah.
Nick Polche, if you're listening.
Is a corporate attorney, so... Yeah, sorry, not Nick. Nick is a real estate guy. Go ahead.
Oh, no, so, yeah, no, go ahead, talk about Brian. We should be focusing on Brian right now.
Right, well, he says he's a corporate attorney. How are you working in manufacturing if you're a corporate attorney for a manufacturer? That's like saying, you're a brewer because you were an accountant for a brewer.
Yeah.
Ooh. I make the best beer. Uh-huh. I mean, you may file those reports, but that doesn't make you a brewer. UW System Regent. I mean, I guess he's the most high-profile candidate. There's that to be said. I don't know if that should necessarily be acquainted with Sirius. What is it? What does that even mean? It's such a terrible word to use with politicians. He's the first Sirius candidate.
Okay, so wisconsin.edu/regent/about-the-regents.
Mm-hmm.
There's bios of these guys.
Oh, sweet. There
so
we go.
So he was just appointed in... Here, let me send it to you.
2016. Yeah.
Oh, did you find it?
No, I remember that from the article I just read.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was appointed in 2016, so he's... not even really done much. I mean, so all this talk about him overseeing a budget of blah, 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 hundreds of millions that affects a blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I guess he may have looked at it.
Yeah. So, this is weird. His address is Charter NEX Films. Like, why are they giving that as his... That's really weird. To mail him.
In Milton?
Yeah. Anyway, it says here he earned his Bachelor of Science degree from the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown University and earned his law degree from UW Law School. He has worked as an attorney for McDermott, Will, and Emery, focusing on business law, corporate governance,
Community
and mergers.
Fund Advisory Board.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, what is that?
I'm not sure. Janesville organization. I think they might be the people responsible for trying to fix downtown, but I don't. It'd be hard to say that they fixed anything.
Interesting.
Prior to joining Charter Nex, Charter Nex, is it a film?
Down the rabbit hole we go.
Okay. Down Charter Nex.
Blown film extrusion. I didn't know that was allowed in Milton.
I'm surprised that's... You certainly can't put that on TV, right? about...
They produce the industry's best monolayer, co-extruded, and barrier films for a variety of applications. So, yeah, they're a manufacturer. Sounds like a cool company. I didn't know such things were done. Here. Oh, wait. This isn't, like, photography film.
No, this is, like, plastic film. This is terrible for the environment.
Oh, shit. Never mind.
Plant locations. They have Milton Plant and Bloomer. Delaware, Ohio, Rhinelander, Superior. Wow, they have places all over. Turner Falls and Massachusetts and, yeah, South Carolina. So this is a huge company.
All right.
Although I gotta say, the place in Delaware kind of looks like they took over an old strip mall. Delaware, Ohio. Sorry.
Looks like he took down his LinkedIn page.
He took it down. That's interesting.
So on Google, it has, you know, a LinkedIn thing. General counsel and secretary has that same company. Has a little, like, text here, which is all stuff that was seen otherwise. And then you actually click on it and it says profile not found. I don't know if that's
so,
because
yeah,
I'm not
taken down.
Signed in. You don't have to sign in on LinkedIn to look at stuff, right?
Here, send me that link. I'm sure I'm signed in on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm not on the LinkedIn. Boop. I mean, I would take down my LinkedIn if I was running for political office, but...
Would you? I mean, that's... this profile, yeah, it's gone.
I mean, if... You nuked it. If there's anything I thought that could be used against me...
Well, it's mostly... It should just be purely professional. Like, if you're just talking about your work, then that's the stuff that you put on LinkedIn. That's what makes it different from Facebook and all of the other popcorn social media.
Yeah, but when you've been a corporate attorney, and I don't know. Like, when you've been... Like,
but he's not running as a Democrat.
Yeah. Well, but eventually he'll be running against a Democrat. For some reason... He's on ratemyprofessors.com.
Interesting. Did he... I guess he's in the education sphere because he's a regent, right?
He has one student rating.
One star.
No, it's 5 overall quality, 4 level of difficult. But I don't know if... Yeah. It says law professor, but...
Did he teach at UW Law? Huh.
I haven't seen that anywhere else except for that.
Well, it probably would have been on his LinkedIn page.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, I think that's enough out of him for now.
That's all there is to have about him. I don't know if we could talk more about... empty, vacuous nothingness that yes. is Brian's style and his lack of social media presence.
You can only and say apparently, so many things about white bread.
Yeah, his fundraising isn't even set up. Why would you announce before you have your fundraising and donation page up? That's like... You think for somebody with congressional experience, that would have been the first thing he did.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're doing a media blitz this first week.
I mean, that's why you do the media blitz, yes. So you can push people to... Anyway, that's enough for this.
You had some thoughts about how awesome Assad is, or...?
Terrible. No, but some people on the left, in an anti-imperialist kind of fervor, have kind of been retweeting like Russian and Syrian propaganda about the chemical strike, and it's a little annoying. Go ahead.
That the chemical strike didn't happen?
Yeah, that it was all just... if it did happen, it was Jaish al-Islam, the rebel group that the Syrian army was taking the area from.
Yeah.
Or that it was the White Helmets, the humanitarian organization, allegedly. But, yeah, it's tough to say it's a conspiracy theory, but it's a propaganda push. And this is what happens when you are always against something. If you don't have anything that you're for in your political ideology, then you get twisted in knots by people who are better at information warfare than you are. And you end up speaking out against things that you should be, that you should not be, or speaking out for something in this case that you should not be.
It strikes me it's not just being anti-Trump, but also just being, like, having this blanket, no matter what, distrust of
West
and imperialism. You know, just like...
Well, yeah, and I'm anti-imperialist myself.
Yeah,
imperial state, but this isn't... Yeah, that... Like, you don't endorse Assad in this for the sake of anti-imperialism.
Yeah, have to be against the U.S. Sorry, you don't even have to be for the U.S. response.
Mm-mm.
To still... First of all, like, you can trust... Like, I think I was saying this when we were having our pre-show meeting, that it's like, we are capable of having multiple thoughts at once. Like, we don't all have to be boiled down and so simple. That, you know, you can dislike Trump, you can dislike the strikes, you can think Assad used chemical weapons to attack Syrians.
Right, and denounce that for being terrible.
Yeah.
They are also bad.
You can dislike Trump and dislike the foreign policy of America before Trump.
Yeah.
I think after the chemical attacks happened, didn't I might be getting it wrong. I think it was Mattis. But I thought it was someone high up that was like warning everyone.
Yeah, Mattis was
they're gonna have a bunch of propaganda.
Mm-hmm. And Mattis was skeptical that it was about the entire attack anyway, but he came around for the strike, probably because Bolton was arguing for something far worse.
Well, I mean, the report I saw is that he may have been for the strike, but he wanted it to happen a completely different way, which might have led to it not happening, possibly. Probably not, but...
Hmm.
Going through Congress.
I mean, if we just let the OPCW do their job, it would be a lot less murky.
Yeah.
And, again, this maybe I talked about this last time, but they kind of destroyed evidence if they did think that site was a chemical weapons, you know, depot and research laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
Now the investigators that are in country are looking at a pile of debris. Hmm.
Well, I mean, back to the point at hand, though, I mean, it's... Our government's response isn't necessarily helping fight the disinformation campaign that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's not... It's not the... It's only kind of... I mean, it doesn't directly, like, with empirical... Oh, my God! Ninjas are attacking you on motorcycles. It doesn't necessarily empirically support the propaganda campaign, but it's enough that for someone who's already buying into that, it supports it.
Yeah, it's an easy leap to make.
Yeah, because that's what they would do if they, you know.
Well, it's what information warfare is. Like, just get people on your side by twisting the facts in whatever way you need to. And yeah. Altering reality for whatever appearance you want to make.
Yeah. So, this past weekend... Go ahead.
I just wish 1 week we could not talk about Syria.
So this past weekend, we were hanging out, and I was telling you how... Well, I was really telling our mutual friend how I am part of the completely blanket, simplified, always anti-Trump cult. But I am nuanced enough that I don't necessarily have to then support other things, like in what you're speaking of, you know, Assad propaganda. But I was thinking how it's kind of your fault. And here's why. I didn't say this at the time, but I was thinking about it yesterday. And it's kind of because it is... This is why it's related to the topic at hand, is that we are sort of in an information war thing going on here. And this has been at least going on since, you know, at least 2016. And it's... However you think Russia collusion, blah, 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 happened, there was information warfare going on, and it did have an effect. And, like, even if it's all domestic, like, even if you completely discount Russia, you still had Alex Jones types and that thing going
on.
Well,
Jared Kushner was directly involved as the head of the digital campaign, so...
Yeah. You know, and all the Hillary as Satan memes, and it's just... And so... It's like, so let's say, like, let's use the war metaphor then. We're calling it information warfare. It's kind of like I feel that, you know, is it my responsibility as someone who's trying to be on the other side of an information war to be nuanced about the effects this will have on humanity and the way our societies interact? Or am I just fucking fighting? Like, and, you know, if in World War II... We weren't asking American soldiers to think about some sort of broad, like...
Sure we were.
Well, a little bit in terms of the issue at hand.
Fascism.
Well, yes, but they weren't getting into how warfare itself might change the coming century or, you know, like... I mean, yes, we shouldn't be completely irresponsible, and that's why I agree with you on the... That doesn't mean that you support a chemical weapon-using dictator, but... Like, I think that me being totally anti-Trump is okay, and I do not have the luxury of thinking about how partisanship might affect our politics in the decades to come, or...
Man, if the two parties we have now are still around in 8 years, I'll be surprised.
Yeah. Fair. But all I'm saying is that I remember when we started this podcast... And you talked me into getting on Twitter. You're like, there's an information war going on. Like, Alex Jones is kind of right about that, calling, you know, InfoWars.
Well, and I stand by that point.
Yeah.
We are in an information war, and we are fighting it through a podcast, if nothing else.
And I think that, I don't know, that just kind of has gotten me to be a little bit more, just a little bit more, like, making things black and white. And, you know, like, I'm not an idiot. I know when things are gray and, you know, but it's like, it's okay to not be... I guess what I'm saying is, like, if you get too detached because things are, like, too academic thinking about it. Like, you hear this from journalists a lot. Like, there's some journalists that are like, I don't vote and I know I legitimately do not have an opinion about... Like, fuck those people. I'm not saying you have to report using your bias.
Right, because they're not supposed to. You can't. Journalists aren't supposed to like sign political petitions or do much more than vote, but they do vote because you know we have a secret ballot in this country, and people are still entitled to their opinions.
Yeah, but some don't. I was listening to an interview. I believe it was with. I don't want to get it wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's with Katie Turr from NBC.
MSNBC.
Yeah, and she in this interview was saying, "No, I don't vote because." you know, and the pushback was like, well, hey, I mean, isn't that your civic duty to vote? And she's like, I think that my reporting on politics contributes much more than my single vote would. And...
Sorry.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, first of all, you could just fucking vote. Just, like, I want to say people can do two things at once. They can be mature enough to separate these parts of their lives, but maybe they can't be.
I don't know. I mean, there you are running up kind of against some professional ethics, but not really. I don't understand. Her not voting is just, I don't know, just not voting.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, again, I'm not saying that all journalists have to be like advocacy or, you know, journalists by any means. Not that I think there's anything inherently wrong with that, but I think it's good that we have different kinds.
Maybe not the colluding lawyer kind of journalism, whatever that is called.
I don't know what that is. so, anyway. Well, okay, so speaking of apocalyptic rhetoric, there's a couple cabinet nominations, political, or Senate appointments by the president that need Senate confirmation. Two of them are cabinet officials. Mike Pompeo, Ronnie Jackson are up for Secretary of State and Secretary of VA, Veterans Affairs, respectively. There's also the CIA director, Gina Haspel. That's not a cabinet position, though, right?
No, it's not a cabinet, but she still needs to get confirmed. Yeah.
Is that one of those ones that they call cabinet level, but it's not part of the cabinet?
No, that's like the EPA.
Oh, okay.
Like, the Director of National Intelligence would be an example of a cabinet-level official, but the CIA would technically report through them, so...
Mike Pompeo did, it was reported late Monday night, I believe, get passed the committee vote, which you don't need to get Senate confirmation, but it hasn't happened where a nominee didn't get out of committee in like 100 years, and he was really close. But he did get it, and it's because two things happened. One, Rand Paul is a fucking liar. And two, the Democrat Chris Coons voted present, but he did not vote. He did not vote to
against.
Yeah. Wait, is that it? That he didn't vote against? Yeah, I guess that'd be it.
Yeah, because Rand Paul. I watched the his. Rand Paul did not go easy on Mike Pompeo, even compared to the Democrats. Like that was an antagonistic interaction from the very first seconds.
Yeah, but that's that to me that speaks all the more though.
Yeah, and that makes me respect Rand Paul a lot less than I did before because he's one of the few people that actually stands against our imperialistic tendencies.
But then completely caved because he got a phone call from Trump saying that no, Mike Pompeo thinks everything that you want him to think. Like what the fuck?
No, I don't believe that, so you should... Man, Rand Paul, if he had any integrity, should have just been like, I don't believe you, sir. I am going to not vote to... Yeah.
It was reported by the Young Turks that Pompeo is a rapture-believing...
rapture theologist? Yeah,
and so... And he's even been spreading some of this nonsense at the CIA... Which has quote, scared people shitless there.
Kofor Black, the first head of the Counterterrorism Center, was theological too, but to have the director of CIA have any, like, real theological bias, it's just really, really alarming.
Well, and then now the Secretary of State. Hey!
Yeah, and now Secretary of State.
Like, I remember talking about this a lot back in under the W's administration. How our legal editor was always chicken littling how, and not that he was wrong, but chicken littling how there's all these people that are genuinely believe in the rapture and we have to take back the Holy Land, and that's why we, you know, are involved in the
Middle East. That's why we're moving our embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah, and, but I don't think Colin Powell and I don't think, Condoleezza Rice was of that ilk, though I'm less sure about Rice. But, I mean, this guy, he's way more like the Pence mold of things. Shit, I don't even know if I've heard Mike Pence talk this way.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Pence does seem to be like one of those hard-right theological guys, but again, that doesn't... He doesn't advocate for the apocalypse. Why would our head of a... our Secretary of State is going to be advocating for the apocalypse now? That's great.
And he will...
But even in his short year, apparently people... I read that article, and it said that people were shocked and then scared.
Yeah, yeah.
And just in his short tenure at CIA from... getting a hint of his views, that's terrifying.
And he's receiving votes from three Democrats, Senator Donnelly from Indiana, Heidekamp from North Dakota, and Manchin from West Virginia, which...
Well, those two have really high Trump scores, or Manchin and Heidekamp, do you?
Yeah, and so I want to talk about... I mean, it's okay. Pompeo probably... should be not confirmed by the Senate. I would say he's very close to not being, so obviously there's senators that agree with that stance.
Hopefully there are some Republicans that do.
Well, supposedly not. Rand Paul was the only one that had come out vocally against. A couple other ones, I think, like Jeff Flake, was like, I'm looking for reasons to like him, I just haven't found him yet. Oh, that's such a great quote.
Well, and then he's like I guess he's not exactly a false valor guy, but he lied about being deployed overseas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's the other thing that came out. Like, he's never actually been to Iraq.
Jesus Christ.
He may have been a platoon commander, but he was never actually deployed overseas, even though he harkens about that all the time. He mentioned it in the committee hearings.
That's like on John Oliver this past weekend, they talked about Zinke claiming to be a geologist all the time.
Yeah, these people are stealing glory that they don't even have.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about, like, I hear takes from, you know, people on the broad left about these kind of Trump state, red state Democrats. And to their credit, they are in states that are way more red than, say, our Tammy Baldwin here in Wisconsin, whereas we're a little bit more down the middle state. That being said, she doesn't hold back. I mean, maybe these people just aren't liberal, really, too.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe they're just voting how they believe. That's certainly possible. Note my skepticism.
Well, Joe Manchin is... I mean, I'm surprised that guy hasn't switched parties, to be honest.
That's probably true.
I mean, Heitkamp is kind of new. I mean, she, I don't know. Her Trump score, I think, is going up.
Is she a first-term senator?
If memory serves, okay. She is.
So the thing I don't get, though, is why they think... Okay, so in the article from the Washington Post... they quoted Tom Cotton, who kind of made a threat at some of these Democrats.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like, you know, we're going to really come after them if they don't vote for this guy. And the thing is that that's going to happen anyway. Like, they're still going to be running against a Republican who is still going to be attacking them. As hard as they can. Like, there's not going to be a Republican that puts an arm behind his back, you know?
No.
And so, I'm not necessarily saying they have to, like, play to the furthest, you know, extreme of the party by any means, but...
They're going to.
You have to differentiate, right? Don't you have to differentiate yourself? Or are they differentiating themselves by being centrists and... they're like, at least we're not super, like, crazy far right? Is that their only argument?
At this point, I mean, I don't know. We're seeing such huge swaths of retirement, where who knows what the Republican Party is going to look like even next year.
God.
Between people losing and people, as I said, retiring.
I feel like it's only going to get...
this is not going to get better, no. Then we're going to have a bunch of people who don't know how to be politicians and the rule.
Yeah.
I mean, at best, we're from the left, we're getting a lot of, like, librarians, teachers, and...
Even scientists, sure. And...
Even scientists, yeah. So that's a positive development. I'd like to see more scientists and people who know how to think about these policies that they're voting on in office.
Well, I think there's a lot of... how many will win, I don't know, but I think there's a lot of potential for a really great resurgence on the left. I'm actually not someone that's super negative and skeptical, even about the midterms, beyond... the game being rigged against the Democrats. But beyond that, I'm not, like, super cynical, like, oh, they're gonna fuck it up again.
I mean, don't underestimate their ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, but, I mean, defeat is expected. Maybe it's just because I'm coming at it from a different perspective. I think that... I think a lot of people on the left... expect them to win, and if they don't, that means they fucked up. And I think you could even say this for 2016, not specifically maybe the presidential election, but the broader 2016 election. The game is rigged against the Democratic Party. It just is. And so they shouldn't win.
Because... I mean, they're going to. I think we have a good chance of getting both their... Democrats, rather, have a good chance of getting the House and the Senate this coming year. Like, the Overton window is about to pop back hard.
Maybe. I mean, I agree with that, but I think it's... I just kind of... Again, I'm coming at it from a perspective of maybe I predict them to win, but to me it's still an upset if they win. Because, like, they have to win, what, over 7% more of the vote just to get the barest majority in the House?
Yeah, because of those horribly gerrymandered districts.
Yeah, and it's like... I don't know. To me, it's just... I just think it's a difficult road, even when you are going against... Like, everyone wants to kind of paint Trump... Not everyone. Even people, his antagonists, want to paint him as like, oh, he's... Like, the New York Times kind of way of looking at things. Like, oh, what's... He's tapping into something in this country. Blah, blah, blah. No, he's just playing a game that's rigged for his favor. And his party's favor.
And they push down voter... Like,
yeah.
My biggest counterpoint to that would... Well, maybe not exactly a counterpoint, but voter participation has been, like, going down and down since, like, the 70s, I think, to the point where it's a small fraction of Americans that who get to decide who our president is. And, like, any just reverse in that is going to cause, like, you know, tidal waves to our establishment politics.
Yes.
And because I think, especially the kid, like, people younger than us are way more left than is currently represented in our government.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue even that, to a degree, though, has been, in a more nebulous way, rigged against the left. Like, the social welfare policies of the right has put such a strain on certain classes and certain people, particularly in cities, that... It's like, you sent out this article about, the, like, welfare reform in Wisconsin, and it focused on a family. They clearly have a vested interest in who's the governor, who's the representatives, but do they even have the luxury to think about that?
Yeah, right? Do they even... I would be surprised if... I mean, the guy works out of his car, so he probably listens to the news, but...
Or do they? Can they vote because they don't have a residence? How the fuck is that being done nowadays?
I mean, homeless people have the right to vote, but they're one of the most easily disenfranchised groups. Because,
yeah, show me a proof of residence.
Right. Well, you have to do that here in Wisconsin, right, to register.
Yeah.
I had to take my utility bill in.
I mean, I don't know what they do. There might. I don't even know. There might be a way, but it's not easy,
I mean,
whatever the way is.
Why would you even do that? Because it would involve such kind of like embarrassment and social stigma. I can easily see why most people wouldn't subject themselves to that.
Yeah, or you're like have more like pressing concerns of the moment.
Yeah, right? Like you're going to leave your stuff outside of the voting booth so you can go inside and vote and come outside and all your shit is gone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they're not going to let you bring in a shopping cart.
Or a backpack.
Yeah. Or your dog. Or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah, no, it's... Or they'll just call the cops on you for no reason, just based on appearance. Right. Yeah. Other cabinet thing going on. I'm not really sure
Ronnie
how
Jackson
we got way off of that.
Yeah.
Ronnie Jackson up for the VA Affairs. You want to talk about some of the
Well, apparently he's allegedly fosters a hostile work environment, drinks excessively on the job, which doesn't really surprise me, and then apparently overprescribes, which is a dangerous accusation for one, him being a physician, and two, mm-hmm. being head of our VA. Like, because obviously here in Wisconsin, especially in Tomo, we've had the overprescribing problem, and it's, yeah, wreaking havoc on communities. So hopefully that puts a veto on his nomination, but there's who the heck are they going to get instead? What nomination? Like, they're not, the nominations aren't getting better, so, and I guess not exactly unqualified, but an alcoholic overprescriber as a cabinet official is not a good look.
Yeah, especially for the VA. I mean, it's veterans, to me, are susceptible group for overprescribing.
Usually, a lot of them have chronic pain issues.
It looks like just, I think as we've been recording, Trump hinted that he's dropping out.
Yeah, I bet.
Quote, Trump, Trump hints Ronnie Jackson might withdraw. Associated Press, President Trump says of VA nominee Ronnie Jackson, it's totally his decision whether to drop out.
There's the door. You can choose to walk through it.
Some of the things I just saw on Twitter, I like how Trump has just now ruined Ronnie Jackson's life and career for no reason.
Yeah.
Today, Trump tanks him at a press conference. Trump is only loyal to himself. Everyone else is collateral.
Wait, was Macron next to him? Is there a reaction shot from President Macron?
Yes, there is. He is looking straight at Trump. Like, really? This is
well, okay. That guy speaks English.
There, hey, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, Trump said, quote, if I were him, I wouldn't do it, though I totally stand behind... Well, he didn't. The last part I'm adding. Though I totally stand behind him.
Well, yeah. So that's interesting.
I don't know, they really caved fast. I mean, if these are completely baseless claims, like, I know a lot of lies can sink a lot of people in Washington and all that, but I mean, this has only been going on for a day.
Right? If they caved that quickly, there must have been some meat to those bones.
Yeah, ooh. And I think, did I see somewhere that maybe he even has a new White House doctor? I'm not sure about that one.
I would bet. I mean, if that guy is taking over responsibilities as VA secretary, he couldn't be a White House physician, too.
If that had gone through. I think they maybe already replaced him. I don't know.
I guess we could talk about Emmanuel Macron's state visit.
Yeah, let's finish with that.
Yeah, so apparently they were discussing Syria, Iran, and denuclearization, I think was the third topic. Well, the first two are important enough that the third one can be ignored. The campaign season is starting up in the Middle East. We've been watching Kushner's plan for Middle East develop over the last few months, and May is going to be the first window where they can really get that whole anti-Iran coalition kicked down the hill.
Where do you think there's going to be fighting?
Syria and maybe Iran, if Bolton can convince people to go ahead with the attacks.
That's insane, by the way.
Not your take. But I mean,
oh, okay. It's like, it's insane. Oh, no. Like, I'm a crazy person.
Like, okay. Say what you will. And we've said a lot throughout our lives about the build-up to the Iraq War. But at least there was a build-up. And it took a while.
Right, because what is it, May 8th? The sanctions are going to need to be renewed? Or the waiver is going to have to be signed?
Be Iran sanction re-up. I thought it was... it's in May. It's certainly in May.
Yeah, John Oliver covered it this past weekend. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, that has to be renewed, and that'll probably be about the same time that they would move militarily, because as I said, campaign season is starting in the Middle East.
I mean, it's just... What would we be doing with Iran? Like, no one's... Like, it takes time to, like, send boots on the ground, so we're just gonna bomb the shit out of a country? Like, that's it? That's fucking horrible.
Well, getting France on board will, you know, keep... Well, allow Trump some measure of international and political cover for the attacks. With Saudi Arabia and Israel and all the regional powers being involved, it might just be a Western cover for an invasion in the Middle East. Hmm. Like, I don't think the Saudi Arabian military has troops enough or strength enough to necessarily crack into Iran across the Persian Gulf, but they might try. And, yeah, with Iraq being neutral at best, they would have to go across the water.
Yeah, but doesn't that mean that they're... I mean, but isn't Iraq not neutral at best? Aren't they?
No, the Prime Minister of Iraq is trying not to get involved. But if they do attack Iran, all bets are off, because 60% of that country is theologically Shiite Islam like Iran. So there would be some, shall we say, sympathies in cross-border commerce and all that.
Looks like it's May 12th that the thing gets renewed, so the day before Mother's
May
12th. Day. So,
Hey, Trump, give everybody's mother a Mother's Day gift and don't start a war with Iran.
So, but, I mean, do you think... Isn't it unlikely we would get France on board, or...?
I would have... A year ago, I would have said less likely, but Macron seems kind of a centrist and without any they were involved in the Syria attack. So yeah, I would say that it is more likely now that they would get on board than a year ago.
I guess. I mean, but that's like a pretty... Like, France wouldn't have any grounds to do this unless there wasn't a nuclear deal. And so Trump's going to blow up the nuclear deal and force everyone's hands? Why don't they just bomb us?
Don't say that question too loud. There's some real...
I'm not trying to...
I mean, I've been wondering that for the past few years, why there isn't more of a fervent anti-American effort overseas, but it's not an idea as an American that I want to say out loud and cause to develop.
Yeah. No, yeah. I could give you a little theory on that quick. I think it's because anti-Americanism has been co-opted by the radical, you know, whatever you want to call it, ISIS, Al-Qaeda folk. Like, those are the folk heroes of anti-Americanism, and I think even most, like, say, Western European, or just European, people wouldn't want to associate with that.
Right.
Because they've been the subject of the violence, too.
Sure. Apparently the Jerusalem embassy is also opening in May, and Steve Mnuchin is leading that delegation.
Ooh.
So look for that. May is going to be an interesting month in foreign policy.
All right, well, have all your fun this month. You got a week left. So we're going to watch Avengers Infinity War and then just live it?
I guess. Hopefully we don't have to rewrite the plot and bring characters back from the past to fight Thanos. Yes. Man, I hope I didn't just spoil Infinity War.
Yeah, we're gonna have to, like, revive, like, famous historical figures.
Let's bring back Churchill.
So that'd not be an old interesting Churchill, thing. But
young Boer War Churchill.
Ugh. It'd be interesting or maybe World thing War to have, to, like, look at historical figures and what they would think of politics today. It's a little bit like, you know, like people do with the Founding Fathers, you know, they get politicized that way so often. But
maybe we can do a historical figures Avengers, like, who were the greatest warriors in history that you would want to fight Thanos? My short list would probably have Lupu on it.
Is that the guy from the, like, Warring States or whatever that is? Not Warring States. Mm-hmm. Is it Warring?
Yeah, the Three Kingdoms period. Three Kingdoms, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I think
maybe Alexander the Great?
He'd probably be one of my... Yeah, he'd probably be one of your just tactical leaders. I'd be going more for, like, cunning, though. You know, my mind's blanking on some sort of famous cunning figure, but,
Lawrence of Arabia?
Yeah. Yeah,
Oh, Che Guevara?
Well, Che Guevara, you might want to call him up once the first wave loses, and they're like, okay.
Alright, we're fighting a desperate effort with no resources. Let's bring in Mao and Che Guevara. Guerrilla generals.
Yeah, or maybe Simón Bolívar, or,
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Who's that one guy, I'm terrible with names. He's from, he was a general in South America. He was,
What, Pinochet?
No. The time, he was a contemporary of, Bolivar. Oh, I know our legal editor's fucking screaming at the... he's screaming
not
at
just recording.
Right now.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about, but the name escapes me.
I'm gonna find this out, and then we're closing the show. San Martin. De San Martin. I was thinking... Jose De San Martin. The thing that's cool about him with these types of people is that he's like, nope, I'm gonna take an army into Chile that Argentina helped build, despite Argentina being like, no, you can't take that army. And then he's going to take it, and then he's going to do the exact same thing in Chile, going into Peru. But he turned this whole town into, like, just purely for the sake of building this army. And he spent, like, a year doing it. He like, people were making arms, you know, clothing, shoes, boots, you know, whatever they needed, getting food, and he just, like, completely made it a wartime economy, and then just did it really, really well. Like, Simón Bolívar had, like, all these ups and downs, he had lots of failures. This guy just took his time and did it.
Do the work.
I think if I was fighting Thanos, I'd want that guy on my side.
Right?
Like, here, we'll hold him off for a year, and then you just come in.
Right, don't say your resistance, do the work of resisting.
Yeah, just hide away in the mountains somewhere, building a fucking unbeatable army.
Which is also what Chairman Mao did.
Yeah. Alright, I'm Peter Elber, you can find me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis.
I'm Charles Minnick, you can find me at green_weird, W-Y-R-D.
And you can email the pod at tmwttpod@gmail.com. This has been Tell Me What to Think. Make sure to do all the things you're supposed to do for listening to our podcast for free. And we will see you next week. Thank you. Have a good week.
Today's sunny. Today's rain. Destroy the myths that will break our chains. Break your chains!